Welcome to the Disrupting Obesity Podcast. I'm Charlotte Skanes, and I'll be sharing ways to regain control over your body and lose an extreme amount of weight naturally. Being fat is about so much more than just the food. It's about your relationship with food. That means that dealing with your weight is about more than just the food too. You have to change that relationship. You have to start disrupting obesity. It's Ask Whatever 14, and we're chewing through the backlog. These are always among my most popular episodes, so I'm going to make sure that I keep them coming. I really like doing them too, even though I do sometimes tend to go off topic just a little bit sometimes. Anyway, sometimes I get some big questions, either just by the amount of space they take up in my inbox or because they just cover a lot of ground. Sometimes they're both, like this next question. I cut out anything identifying, but that doesn't change the question itself. And you need to know right off the hop going into this one, this is not a Gladys situation at all. This is just an honest question and an entirely fair one, not a Gladys. So here it is. I've followed that you lost 200 pounds, gained back 100, and then lost that. What makes you think you can keep the weight off this time? What's different about re-losing this 100 pounds than when you initially lost the 200? I don't mean this in a snarky way. I've also lost weight and regained and re-lost and regained the weight, and it makes me terrified to lose again for fear of regaining. What makes it different for you this time that gives you the confidence that you won't regain the weight again? Big questions have big answers too. So buckle up for a minute or two. I have to keep the weight off or I could die. Like, I know that we're all in that situation, but for me, it's on fast forward. I can't tax my organs, especially my pancreas. But last year, my kidneys decided to throw their hat in the ring. I don't have a gallbladder, so I can't gain the weight back. I also very deeply don't want to. There's a little bit of pressure given the space that I'm in to not gain it back. And I'm just a lot happier when it's so much easier to move. You probably know how I feel about exercise for weight loss. So that's definitely not what I mean. I have no interest in running a marathon or getting swole, but I sure do like tying my shoes and going up and down stairs easily and being able to breathe and fitting into booths and seats. I like being able to cross my legs and sit with my boys on a roller coaster. And all this stuff is burned in my brain. And it's because of that difference that you're looking for. The difference between losing 200 pounds and losing the 115 or so is the whole almost dying thing that happened in between them. And I don't mean the physical stuff. Well, I do. I've talked about that a fair bit. I got a little bit braver last week and I opened up some more. The physical part wasn't great. Being extremely sick is awful enough. Being extremely sick while obese is a whole other layer of suckitude. But I'm talking about the mental stuff, the ways that my perspective shifted. And I don't know how to articulate that. I really don't. I think I need to spend some time reading books that other people who've almost died have written. And it's not that I haven't thought about it, tried to pin precisely how the whole experience changed me. For years, I maintained that I hadn't changed. I felt the same. I thought I was the same. Then I thought maybe I wasn't the same, but I didn't know how to express it. And that's the stage that I'm still in. One day, I think I'll be able to afford like a ton more therapy and maybe I'll get to the bottom of it. But for now, I just don't know. Everything feels more valuable. I was always an overly sentimental person, but now that's been magnified just exponentially. There are things I used to care about that I just don't give a shit about anymore. There are things that mattered less that matter more, and things that already meant the world to me have become just inexpressibly more valuable. How many pounds per week is recommended? So this is a tough one because it's super relative. Generally speaking, the whole pound to a pound and a half a week thing holds the most water. When I lost the 200, I did it at a rate of about 1.55 pounds a week. The second time I lost about a pound a week. The thing is though, that weight loss isn't a straight line, right? Like I had weeks where I gained and weeks where I didn't lose and weeks where I lost more than a pound. It's about the long view here. It's one of those graphs where when you're super close to it, it's like super bumpy. It looks like a mountain range, but when you zoom out, right, it just keeps getting smoother and smoother and straighter and straighter. And it's actually just one big mountain. So shoot for an average of a pound to a pound and a half a week. That's your best bet. Which eating window should I start with? 12-12, 16-8, 18-6? I would start by figuring out what your eating window looks like now. Don't worry about what the acceptable windows are, which ones are the most popular, or, you know, what works best for which blood type. Meet yourself where you are first. That's where I'd start. Awareness. 3A weigh it. Make yourself as aware as you can of what you're doing right now. Don't put any pressure on yourself to change anything. Just observe for a couple of weeks. What time do you start eating and what time do you stop? Write it down and get an average. So let's say that you eat 17 hours a day and you start at 7 in the morning and you finish up at midnight-ish. Okay. We're not shooting for precision here. We just want a baseline. So instead of going to a 7-7 and doing a 12-12 split, like eating from 7 in the morning until 7 at night, because right now with this schedule, you're doing a 7-17. Okay. And the goal is to make the first number bigger than the second number, but you don't want to jump off this cliff. Okay. People think that because it's a time thing and not a food thing, my whole small incremental change thing doesn't apply, but it 100% applies to finding your ideal windows and figuring out your fasting ratio, because we've all got one. Very few people eat while they're sleeping. And I'm pretty sure none of those eat the entire time they're asleep. So everybody is doing some kind of intermittent fasting. So go to an 8-16 instead of the 7-17, right? Small incremental changes are what you want here too. The same way you want it with the mayo on your sandwich or the syrup that goes in your chocolate milk. Shave a half hour off each end, or take an hour off one end, depending on whether you're more attached to your morning eating or your nighttime eating. Just shift it slowly. The whole point of intermittent fasting is to help you get into a calorie deficit. And I realize that if you go from a 7-17 to a 16-8, you're way more likely to be in a more severe calorie deficit. You'll lose more weight initially and you're going to see bigger results faster. I totally get that. But I'm all about sustainability. And if you can't do it for long enough to get all of your weight off, what's next? What's the plan? But intermittent fasting can be brutal, right? But if you can't do it for longer than a couple of months, you're kind of screwed from the outset. Unless you're in a position where you can have your weight off in a few months, which is what I meant when I first started to answer the other one, when I said that these questions can be hard to answer because they're so relative, right? But regardless of how much weight you have to lose, if you're looking to make intermittent fasting more of a lifestyle change that's going to get you all the way and keep you at a healthy weight, take your time. After you've gone to an 8-16, move to a 9-15. Keep going until the first number is bigger than the second one, and then you might want to keep pushing yourself to see where you're the most comfortable. I like rocking a 24 every so often, right? You don't have to permanently lock yourself into something. Were there any tricks you used to start handling the night eating? Yes. The key to the answer is that last question, right? I started intermittent fasting and only eating at night. Nobody called it that then. They just called me crazy. But lots of people were doing that. Intermittent fasting has literally been around for as long as we've been recording our history. We just keep coming up with different names for it. I realize, though, that not everybody wants to or can start eating just at night. So if you can't lean into it like I did, and you know you're going to want to eat all night, there are a couple of ways you can go about it. So you can eat lower calorie, bulkier stuff during the day, so you have extra calories at night, right? You can make sure you have lower calorie choices for when the midnight munchies kick in. You can start intermittent fasting and make sure that your window closes just before you usually start snacking at night, and go with an abstinence approach, which is not my favorite of your options, but it's there. On the mindset end of things, try to figure out what's going on behind the scenes for you. Why do you want to eat at night? What's driving it? Is it boredom, stress, the freedom to finally eat what you want without anybody judging you? It's a habit. What's actually going on? What is TDEE? Your TDEE is your total daily energy expenditure. It's the number of calories your body burns each day. That's it. Just doing everything, right? Not just the moving around stuff, not just the exercise stuff. It includes the calories it takes for you to breathe and pump blood around and digest food and grow your fingernails, all the things. To lose weight, you want to eat 500 calories less than your TDEE. and you can figure out yours using an online TDEE calculator. If you want more on things like total daily energy expenditure and calories, check out episode 39. I did a special Ask Whatever episode for that one where I answered nothing but the most common calorie questions that I see. Sometimes this gets confused with BMR. Nope, don't make that mistake. Your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, is part of your TDEE, but there's other stuff that goes into your TDEE that isn't included in your BMR. So if you're going with your BMR or your BMR minus 500, you won't be taking in enough calories. You'll likely lose weight faster, but you're going to burn out faster too. My BMR at my heaviest was over 300 calories less than my TDEE. It might not sound like a ton, but that can be the difference between staying the course and packing it in, right? How do I track something like homemade chili effectively? So that depends a little on what you mean by effectively, but I'm going to assume that you mean accurately. The most accurate way to figure out the calories is to do what I call building out the recipe, which I teach in great detail in my cookbook, which you can buy through the link on my website, or we'll drop one in the notes. But I'm going to teach you how to do it now too, right? I don't like gatekeeping. And I know it's going to sound like it sucks, but it gets easier and it gets faster, I promise. Some tracking apps will let you build recipes in them, right? And they're great, but it's very easy to get hung up on the serving size part. So I actually prefer to do it either on my tablet or on a notepad. For each ingredient, I write down how many calories it is. I add them up and I divide it by the number of servings. And yeah, it takes time. But if you write it down, you only have to do it once. That's the most accurate way. It's probably more efficient to punch homemade chili into your app or Google and take an average of the top five answers that come up. Which way you're going to go is going to depend mainly on which type of person you are and where you're at in your weight loss journey. If you're a type A type person and doing things like building out recipes so you know exactly how many calories are in your grandmother's quiche, go for it. If you're the type of person who gets stressed out and starts to feel hemmed in and burnt out when you exert that kind of control, taking an average might be the better way to go, especially as you're getting going. Because that's the second factor. Where are you at with your weight loss? How much weight have you got left to lose? The less you have, the fewer calories you have to play with, so the more precise you need to be. When I had 3,500 calories a day, if I went with an average on my bowl of chili and I was off by even 100 calories, okay, that's about 3% of my daily calories, but it's about 6% now. So it's a much bigger deal. It's all very relative. There's a lot of mindset stuff going on here too, not just the math. At the beginning of your journey, if you're doing too much too soon, you're going to burn yourself out. The closer to the end you are, the more skills and habits you'll have built up. There will be things that have become just second nature, right? So you'll have the mental time and space to do things like figure out how many calories are in your chili. What about the week before your period? Yeah, so that's a fucking nightmare. I am ravenous the week before my period. It's one of the number one ways that I know my period's coming because I just can't stop eating. I feel completely insatiable. Plan for it as best as you can. You know it's coming and know that ultimately things are going to balance out. You can fight for that balance. I know I'm going to want to eat more than usual the week before my period. So that means I have 3 weeks a month where my appetite is lower. And I remind myself of that, which helps with the balance. And I do know how lucky I am to have a regular cycle. I'm also gearing my answer to the rest of this message that I'm not sharing because I have a thing about stripping personal information from the questions that you guys speak in, that you guys send in. Generally speaking, generally, Gladys, not you specifically, calm down. The adults in the room are all on the same page and you're going to be just fine. And if you're already upset, you'd better hold on to your hat because things are about to get worse. Generally speaking, whether it's the week before, during, after, or in between periods, it's the deficit. And I know hormones can impact weight loss and weight gain. I know. But whether they're a factor for you or not, if you aren't in a calorie deficit, you can't lose weight. So please stop messaging me that you can't track your calories because of your hormones. So it doesn't matter. So there's no point. And that somehow makes me full of shit. If you're not in a deficit, you can't lose weight. And you can't know if you're in a deficit if you're not tracking your calories. I don't like it any more than anybody else, especially those of us who are currently hormonal. Calm down, Gladys. But it is what it is. I have so much food noise. How do I retrain my brain? Okay, so I have so many thoughts on this, but I'm going to hold myself today to just one. This is a thing for me right now because I'm dealing with intrusive thoughts, mostly of a non-food related nature, but with my PTSD, intrusive thoughts are something that I struggle with a lot. So I was raised to believe that I am not my body. I'm the thing that lives inside my body, which has really come in handy with some of the things I've had to deal with physically over the years. I've done a lot of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it reinforced that belief for me. But the takeaway I've spent the most time thinking about and trying to get my head around, and it's been a bit of a challenge, like it made sense as soon as it was explained to me, the concept, but it's taken a while for me to parse through it, and I'm still working my way through it. Because the whole, I'm not my body, I'm the thing that lives inside of it, that thing just, that always made sense to me because of my dad. He was a polio survivor and just a super cool, awesome guy, but he was also very physically limited, but nothing else about him was. So I've always just known that we're not our bodies, right? Plus I was raised Presbyterian and it made sense to me with all of that too. We don't take our bodies with us to heaven, right? So I was getting this messaging from all sides, but the big CBT takeaway for me was that we're not our thoughts either. We're the thing that observes our thoughts. And that blew me out of the water. And it was hard because I've self-identified with my thoughts my whole life. So I'm still working my way through it, but I am making some serious headway. And the thing I'm doing right now to deal with intrusive thoughts that I also use when I'm dealing with food noise, which are intrusive thoughts, is that I'm replacing them. Very consciously choosing to replace them. So the thought I don't want to think about pops into my head. And as soon as I catch myself, I immediately replace it with a different thought, a specific thought that I have designated to help me cope with this specific issue. As soon as I start to notice, like right away, that the intrusive thoughts are going on, I start thinking about meeting Richard Simmons, my hero. The thought that isn't serving me pops up and I swap it out with Richard Simmons. Pick something, pick a daydream, pick one thing. And when the food noise creeps in, think about that instead. Think about the trip to Disneyland. I don't care what it is. Think about meeting your hero. Just make something up and replace it. It takes practice. It can be frustrating, but it does get easier. It really does. I'm short, and everything says to eat under 1200 calories if you're sedentary, but then I'm hungry. I try to move, but nothing is happening. Any advice? Yes. Start by checking your TDEE using an online calculator like I was talking about a few questions ago. So 1200 calories was just the magic number for a very long time, decades. It didn't matter how big you were or how tall you were or what you weighed or how much you moved. If you were overweight, you'd be told to eat 1200 calories. It's shit advice. Our bodies are all different. But yeah, if you're super short and you're fairly close to your goal weight, you might be eating 1200 calories. I'm 137 pounds. My TDEE is 1700 calories and change. It's like 1721 or something. So if I want to lose a pound a week, I need to go down to 1200 calories a day. No matter how many calories you have, you can mitigate hunger. You can figure out which foods, combinations of foods keep you feeling fuller longer. The best way to space out your calories so that you feel more satisfied throughout the day. Figuring that out is going to help you feel fuller longer. You can eat lower calorie versions of your favorite foods. You can eat high volume, low calorie foods. There are ways to learn how to cope as your calories keep dropping. And it's important not to drop them too fast. Do you have to be in a calorie deficit each day or can you do it by the week? So this one is like a lot of things. Can and should aren't the same thing. You can cut off your own foot with a chainsaw. Does that mean you should? Probably not. It's likely not a great idea. Yes, technically you absolutely can track your calories and manage a weekly deficit instead of a daily one. I really don't think it's a good idea, though. And it's a mindset thing, not a math thing. I think weekly management is a valuable skill set to have if you've got a wedding coming up or, you know, something like an event where you know you're going to blow your calories out and you just want to enjoy it without blowing the whole week. Okay, cool. So let's just do some easy math, okay? Let's say you've got 3,000 calories a day. That's how many calories a day I had when I started at 338, right? To put me in a deficit. So that's 21,000 calories a week. So let's say I've got a coworker's wedding coming up on the weekend. Awesome. I could drop an additional 500 calories from each day, you know, eat 2,500 calories Monday through Friday instead of the 3,000 I would have had each day. And I'd have an extra 2,500 calories for Saturday, right? And I know how awesome that all sounds. The problem is the execution. It's pulling it off and not playing games and negotiating with myself all week because that's what it actually looks like. Here we go. So I have a shit day on Monday. So I actually go over my 3,000 calories by a couple hundred, but that's okay. That's okay because I tell myself I'll just cut an extra 100 from Tuesday and Wednesday in addition to the 500 I'm already cutting. But on Tuesday, I just manage to stick to the 3,000, which is fine because the week's only getting started. But I forgot about the luncheon on Wednesday. And now it's Thursday and I've got negative 200 calories banked for Saturday. And I'm not sure how I'm going to cut 1,350 calories from today and from tomorrow. If I could successfully manage my weight this way, I would have done it already. But when you're always eating tomorrow's calories today, but promising yourself that you'll turn it around, it doesn't work. Anybody who's dealt with binge eating is going to want to avoid this kind of tracking. It just leads to planned binges. That's all it is. That's what I just described, right? I banked a shitload of calories so I could eat whatever I wanted without consequences at the wedding. But my relationship with food is broken. That's what makes this untenable. This is not a sustainable level of control. I'm eating fruits and carbs, and because I'm not losing, my mind keeps going back to carbs are bad. How do I change my thinking? Yeah, so I really hate the toxic diet industry. This isn't your fault. There's been just mass anti-carbs brainwashing going on for years. Carbs aren't evil. They don't make you fat. They're a fuel source. That's it. It's the same as protein or fat. Sure, the macros do different things, but you need all of them. Your body has to have carbohydrates to function optimally, but there's been so much noise and misleading information about carbs and fruit, so much fear-mongering. It isn't the carbs, it's the calories. And no, carbs doesn't have the most calories of the macros. They're the same as protein. It's 4 calories a gram. Fat has 9. In our most recent Ask Whatever, I shared a little story about a Gladys who got sick when she ate store-bought eggs. And I told you that she wasn't the only Gladys who commented on that post, which is usually how it goes, both because they tend to flock to the same things and then just they start to piggyback on each other, right? So for anybody who missed it, I'm referring to episode 55's Good For You, Gladys, question of the week. It was more of a comment, really, but it pissed me off because I was talking about poverty shaming in the weight loss community and she chimed in about only being able to eat farm eggs, simultaneously missing my point and making it for me, which is really my favorite flavor when it comes to the Happy Bottom Brigade. I also told you last week that I would highlight a couple of my favorite Gladyses. I still haven't figured out if that's right or if it's Glad-eye, right? You know, like an octopus, octopi. Anyway, Gladys number one weighed in and I mean, she just backed up a truck and unloaded a 13-line comment that ultimately veered so far away from anything even remotely resembling the post topic that I didn't even know where to start. But her main point went like this. What about the ultra-processed foods or even produce sprayed with Roundup? Then we've got a whole bunch of nonsense culminating in her heartfelt belief that you need to simultaneously detox your body to burn fat. And that's not the part I'm highlighting today. Typing it out, getting ready for today has really pissed me off again. And I don't think I've talked about this in a while, but I'm doing 2 GFY Gladys questions of the week. So I really do want to try and stay on topic. Okay, so I'm just going to say this And then I'm going to go back to her first bit. But if you have a functioning liver and kidneys, you don't need to detox ever, ever. It's all just a load of horse shit designed to sell you a product that's going to do precisely jack and squat. Oh, but what about this one? Yeah, that one too. All of them. Every single one. All of them. Drink water. Pee. You'll be all right. Oh, and cleanse is just another word for detox. And it's also horse shit. Okay, so she's asking about ultra-processed foods and a chemical that's been around for a very long time and leaves the soil in 24 hours. And I'm no apologist for their parent company. That's not what this is about. And it's not what the post was about either. The post was about me being completely fed up with people being shamed for eating the food that they can afford to buy. I said that calories can't tell the difference between name brands or generic ones, or between store-bought or farm fresh eggs. Being able to shop that way is a privilege. So that part, which is actually kind of the only part, I mean, I've got a lot of points I want to make, but that post only had the one point, and it definitely just went right over poor Gladys's head, just gone. Ultra processed foods are often cheaper. There's a reason people keep choosing them, but that's not what she's asking. She wants me to hop on the shame train and say that they're bad, and I won't. And I totally understand why people, even non-Gladys's, just regular people, get so upset with me when I say this, but the calories really don't care. And it really doesn't matter what you eat, so long as you're in a deficit. And that's back to chainsaws and feet, right? Like, you can lose your weight only eating bacon and bubblegum. So long as you're in a deficit, you sure can. Is it a good idea? No, definitely not. But that's not the point. People are buying the food that they can afford to eat. Nobody should be shamed for how they're getting by right now. And yeah, don't come at me from the healthy choices camp either. Telling people what to eat isn't working. It doesn't work long term. People will find their own way to healthy if we meet them where they are. And the reality is that a lot of obese people are eating ultra processed foods, and they're better off losing their weight while continuing to eat them than they are trying to cut them out and failing. Or cutting them out, losing the weight, but not having the mental space to fix their relationship with food because they were so focused on what they were eating, and now we're back in the 85% club and they've gained all their weight back. What now? I feel like that brings us to a first in Ask Whatever History. We're going to say hello and what the fuck to two Gladys's this week. And Gladys number two came out swinging in all caps. Okay, so for this to make sense, I want to remind you of the way I worded this post. I very specifically said, twice actually, calories can't tell the difference, ... So she screams at me, cancer can tell the difference. Then she stops the all caps and goes, seriously, lady? And then a facepalm emoji. My favorite part of all of this is the way she shifts tone so fast. We go from screaming in rage about cancer to emojis in less than three words. I mean, it's just astounding, right? Yeah, the cancer thing isn't new. For some reason, when I post recipes where I use condensed soup, I start getting accused of promoting cancer. So I kind of got over it with all of that. And I'm pretty sure, like, I didn't Google it or anything, but I'm pretty sure that generic brands and store-bought eggs aren't really high on the known carcinogens list. I'm pretty sure. I mean, come on. I don't want to be the one to have to tell her, but she does realize that the eggs at the store come from a farm, right? Because she wasn't making a point about shopping local or helping to keep local farmers afloat. That was so not her point. And it's not mine either. I think we all need to support them as much as we can, but not everybody has a farm with a roadside stand up the street. That was my point. So I'm not sure which farmer she was accusing of spreading cancer. I guess just the ones that sell their eggs to grocery stores. And maybe I should have asked her, but I don't engage with the all caps Gladys. I just don't. Did your hair fall out because you lost weight? No, my hair fell out because I got sick. When I was in the hospital, when I went in on day one, I had hair that was down to my hips and it was pretty thick. But it was a struggle when I was in there, which is something that I haven't talked about and I'm not sure I'm ready to. Plus, this episode is already pretty long. So yeah, no, it didn't fall out when I lost my weight. Not the first time either. I lost my weight slowly, so my body adjusted. I know hair loss can be an issue, especially with weight loss surgery, but I believe that's a potential issue with any major surgery. And I think in that case, it can be a malnourishment thing as well. I don't fully know why my hair fell out. I think it's really just because I was so sick. I was on TPN for months, like 5 of them. And I thought it provided all the nutrients your body needs. But again, I don't understand what happened. I was too busy dealing with the fact that I went from having hip length hair that I was super in love with to losing like 70% of it. And you'd be right if you guessed that I have a thing about my hair, and I always have. And I don't mean I lost 70% of it this way. I mean, it just fell out. But yeah, if you lose your weight sustainably and are getting the nutrients your body needs, your hair shouldn't fall out as you do it. I've yo-yoed so much that it just doesn't seem realistic anymore. Where do I start? I know. I really do. And I'm sorry. It's an awful place to be. Start by telling yourself that you're going to do things differently this time, so all those yo-yos in the past don't matter anymore. This time, instead of focusing on the food, you're going to focus on your relationship with food. You're going to start slow and meet yourself where you are. I'd call this a shameless plug, but that's not really true because I made something to help with that and I want people to know about it. So I have a free guide to getting started for the last time. It's completely free and it's already helped several thousand people get going, whether they've been yo-yoing or not. I've got some other podcast episodes too that I think would be helpful, 11, 47, 44. And I've got a weight loss workbook, a cookbook, and I have a full immersion year-long weight loss program. It's time to do things differently. It's really time to disrupt things. Next week, I'm back with more of your questions. I'm going to bring Gladys with me too. She's thrilled, by the way. We'll link everything I mentioned in the notes. And you can find this stuff too on my website, disruptingobesity.com. Keep trying, keep tracking, don't be intimidated, and don't give up. You've totally got this. Thank you for listening to Disrupting Obesity with Charlotte Skanes. If you know it's time to take back control, lose the weight, and keep it off, reach out to me privately with a direct message on Instagram that says ready so you can start disrupting obesity.